This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On February 19th of 2026, Michael Scott stood in a Travis County courtroom and spoke for the first time as a man the state of Texas was about to declare innocent. His voice was steady, but his words came from a place that had been filling for 27 years. "I lost my family," he said. "I lost my youth. My daughter was 3 years old when I was arrested. We had just celebrated our first wedding anniversary. I lost the chance to build a family. Every day I have carried the weight of a crime I did not commit." He didn't raise his voice. He didn't plead. He simply described what had been taken. In the same flat, exhausted tone of a man who'd been saying the same thing for decades and was only now being heard. That's what wrongful conviction sounds like when the cameras finally face the right direction. By the time anyone was listening, the damage was already permanent. This is part four of the Yogurt Shop murder series on Hidden Killers. The confessions were coerced. The convictions were overturned. DNA proved someone else was in that yogurt shop. But being released from prison is not the same thing as being free. And this episode is about the cost of what the system took from these men and their families that no exoneration can return. As we go through it, give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in, and we will continue our conversation right there. Press subscribe while you're at it. The road from conviction to release was slow, bureaucratic, and infuriating in the way that only the legal system can be. In 2006, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals overturned Robert Springsteen's conviction. The U.S. Supreme Court refused to reinstate it in 2007. Michael Scott's conviction was overturned in 2008 on the same grounds, the Confrontation Clause violation. The confessions had been used against each man without allowing either to cross-examine the other. The constitutional error that seven jurors later said would have changed their verdict was finally acknowledged by the appellate courts, but overturning the conviction is not the same as declaring innocence. It's the legal system saying the process was flawed, not we were wrong about that person. And that distinction would haunt these men for another 17 years before prosecutors could retry the cases. They made a decision that would change the trajectory of everything. They submitted evidence from the crime scene for YSTR testing, a relatively new form of DNA analysis at the time that isolates male genetic material from mixed samples. This was significant because the original forensic evidence had always been too compromised for standard testing, but YSTR was more sensitive. It could find what older methods couldn't. And what it found was devastating to the prosecution's case. The DNA at the crime scene belonged to one unknown male, not Robert Springsteen, not Michael Scott, not Maurice Pierce, not Forrest Wellborn, not any of the more than 130 people who were tested, including police officers and firefighters who had been at the scene. Someone else had been at that yogurt shop, someone whose identity nobody knew. The science that the jury never saw had just vaporized the foundation of both convictions. On June 24th, 2009, Judge Mike Lynch released Springsteen and Scott on personal recognizance bonds. In October, all charges were formally dismissed after nearly a decade behind bars, years that included a death sentence, a commutation, an appeal, and a slow grinding machinery of a legal system that moves at its own pace regardless of who's trapped inside it. Both men walked out of the courthouse as free citizens. And then the district attorney did something remarkable in its cruelty. Rosemary Lemberg, the Travis County District Attorney, issued a public statement. She said she was dropping the charges because the unknown DNA made it imprudent to proceed to trial. But then she added this: "I remain confident that both Springsteen and Scott are responsible for the deaths at the yogurt shop." She didn't say she was wrong. She didn't say the evidence had cleared them. She said in public to the media that she still believed they did it. She just couldn't prove it anymore. Makes her hope somebody pisses in her yogurt. That statement became a second sentence handed down not by a judge, but by a prosecutor who chose her reputation over their lives. Springsteen and Scott were out of prison. but the highest-ranking prosecutor in the county had just told the world that they were guilty men who got lucky. They weren't exonerated. They weren't declared innocent. They were released under a cloud that the state itself had painted over their heads. And they were expected to rebuild their lives underneath it. Try to imagine what that looks like on a Tuesday morning. You wake up in a world that spent a decade telling you you're a murderer. The conviction is off your record. Technically, the charges are dismissed. Technically, but the district attorney just said on the evening news that she thinks you killed four teenage girls. Employers Google your name, neighbors whisper, dates, and early. Every relationship starts with the same invisible asterisk. The person was once on death row for the worst crime in Austin's history, and the DA still thinks he belongs there. You're not in a cell anymore, but you're not free either. You're living in a space the legal system doesn't have a word for. Somewhere between innocent and accused, where the state has let go of you but refuses to let go of your guilt. Michael Scott's marriage did not survive his incarceration. His daughter, who was 3 when he was arrested, grew up visiting her father through glass and metal detectors. By the time he was released, the family he'd been building when the detectives came for him was gone, not because of infidelity or incompatibility or any of the ordinary things that end marriages, because the state of Texas decided that an 18-hour interrogation of a man with learning disabilities was a reliable way to determine who killed 4 girls in a yogurt shop. Every milestone his daughter experienced, first day of school, birthdays, graduations, happened without her father present. Not because he chose to leave, but because the system chose to take him. And when the system was proven wrong, it offered no apology, no compensation, no acknowledgement of what it had destroyed. Seems like a good mission for us to do some stories on those folks and maybe destroy them. Always looking for new stories. It's coming, friends. It's coming. Robert Springsteen, who had been on death row before his sentence was commuted, tried to reconstruct a life in the shadow of the most infamous crime in Austin's history. He moved, he worked, he existed in the low-profile way that people exist when their name returns a murder charge on the first page of search results. He didn't attend his own exoneration hearing in 2026. Whether that was by choice or circumstance, the absence said something. Not everyone who survives a system wants to stand in front of it again and be told they matter. Some people have heard enough. I don't need to give any more time to you, you broken ass system, and the assholes behind it. Good for him for not showing up. Great, I'm exonerated. I have other things to do. You've wasted enough of my time, you fuck faces. Forrest Wellborn was charged but never tried. 2 separate grand juries, panels of regular citizens reviewing the evidence refused to indict him. That's the system's own filter saying there's not enough here. But being charged with the yogurt shop murders, even without a trial, is not something that disappears from your life. The accusations follow you. It colors every introduction, every background check, every quiet moment with someone who looks at you a little too long and wonders if they know. Wellborn carried that weight for over 25 years before a judge finally said his name and the word innocent in the same sentence. 25 years of being the guy who was charged with the yogurt shop murders. 25 years of the unspoken question in every room he walked into. The grand juries saw through the case almost immediately. Took the rest of the system a quarter century to catch up. And then there's Maurice Pierce. Pierce was the first name on the file. He was 15 years old when he was picked up at North Cross Mall carrying a gun. He was cooperative. He gave information, and Hector Polanco got a confession out of him that another detective threw out the next morning because it didn't match the crime scene. Pierce spent more than 3 years in jail awaiting trial before the charges were dismissed in 2003. He was never convicted. He was never tried, but he was never free of it either. Pierce's daughter, Marissa, would later testify that police and prosecutors harassed her father even after his release, that the system that had wrongly accused him as a teenager continued to circle him as an adult, treating him not as a citizen who had been cleared, but as a suspect who had slipped through the cracks. On December 13, 2010, Austin police officers Frank Wilson and Bradley Smith conducted a traffic stop on a vehicle driven by Maurice Pierce. What happened next ended in a physical confrontation. Pierce pulled a knife from his belt and stabbed Officer Wilson in the neck. Wilson, who survived, drew his weapon and shot Pierce. Maurice Pierce was 34 years old, and he was killed by the same system that had targeted him since he was a child. He never saw his name cleared. He never got to watch his daughter grow up without the shadow of a yogurt shop murder hanging over his family. At the 2026 exoneration hearing, Marissa Pierce stood in that courtroom and spoke directly to her father's memory. "Daddy, you have your name back," she said. "The world finally hears what you were trying to say all along." She directed her anger not at the unknown killer, but at the investigators and prosecutors whose tunnel vision had robbed her father of his dignity and eventually his life. She said she would continue to fight for people wrongfully accused in Texas. She said nobody heard him, nobody believed him, until it was too late. Maurice Pierce didn't get a chance to not show up to his hearing because he had other things to do. He was dead. Murdered. By the very system that had it out for him from day one. The system too short-sighted to understand right from wrong, truth from falsehood. He wasn't not there because he didn't want to be. He was gone. From 2009 to 2026, these men and their families lived in a space the justice system created but refused to name. Released but not innocent. Freed but not exonerated. Unburdened of the prison sentence, but still carrying the accusation. For 17 years, the state of Texas held the position that it couldn't prove that they were guilty, but wouldn't admit they were innocent. Can't be wrong. Won't be wrong. Can't be. No. That's not a legal gray area. That's a form of ongoing punishment inflicted on people whose only crime was being young, being poor, and being available when the system needed to name someone and attach it to the worst night in Austin's history. And it's worth pausing on what those 17 years actually looked like day to day. Imagine applying for a job and knowing that anyone who types your name into a search engine will find articles about the yogurt shop murders. Imagine trying to explain to a new neighbor, a coworker, a potential partner, that you were once on death row and the most notorious crime in your city's history, but it's fine because the charges were dropped. Watch their face change. Watch them do the math. Watch them decide whether they believe you or the district attorney who went on television and said she still thinks you did it. It's not freedom. That's a life sentence served outside the walls. The exoneration would eventually come. The real killer would eventually be identified. The prosecutor would eventually stand in open court and say words that should have been said years earlier. But none of that erases what happened. You can give a man his name back. You can't give him back the years. You can't reassemble a marriage that the system dismantled. You can't undo the brain damage inflicted on a man in a separate case by the same detective whose methods poisoned this one. You can't bring Maurice Pierce back from the dead. You can't return a childhood to a daughter who grew up visiting her father in prison for something he didn't do. The wreckage is permanent. The only question is whether anyone is willing to look at it clearly enough to make sure it doesn't happen again, or that the people who put them there should pay and not be living a retirement with a pension. Like Polanco, who, by the way, we're going to do some stories on. You think it's bad when people Googled these four young, innocent men's names? Hector, Google's ready for you. I just Googled it. There's some stuff that comes up. Not a clear enough reliving of your repertoire. Reliving the magic of your stained, disgusting, biased, short-sighted, narcissistic career, in my opinion. But don't worry, the world will soon know. When folks look you up, I met this guy, this story. Oh, holy shit! Enjoy retirement, asshole. In part 5, which is coming up next, the final installment, we finally meet the real killer. A serial predator who's been dead for decades. Identified through a shell casing in a 13-year-old girl's fingernails. In the courtroom moment where the state of Texas said out loud what it took 34 years to admit. That's next. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. It's coming up. And your thoughts in the comments section. Love to see them. Hope you'll weigh in. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.